Yeah, so my name is Alison Watry. I'm a research fellow here at Salk, and I'm going to talk about development of functional human embryonic stem cell-derived neurons in the mouse brain. So I was quite surprised that nobody showed this before, but actually this is the concept of what we call stem cell therapy. Okay. So the idea is to isolate cells from the inner cell mass of the blastocyst, and we can grow the cells as an unlimited source for differentiated cells that can be used for the transplantation to treat some complex disease such as Parkinson or Alzheimer. However, we do believe that there's a lot of basic science that needs to be done. So we propose to study two questions. One is how to validate the potency of human ES cells in vivo. The other one is, would be really nice to have an in vivo model to study early stage of human development. So we came up with a strategy. It's a very simple strategy, which is to form to make chimeras, chimeric brain composed of human cells and mouse cells. So we use the Cytera 25 cell line, and we infect those cells with the lentivirus expressing the GFP under the control of the CEG promoter. So we manually select the cells that are enriched for HFP expression and quite stable. Those cells, they colocalize with known undifferentiated markers such as OCT4. They are also positive for human nuclear specific antigens. So we can grow the cells in the mouse feeder layer with FGF2. They form round colonies, somehow different from some of the cells that have been seen here. But they are very stable in the karyotype. So to prove that those cells can actually differentiate into neurons, we use the PA6 cell. The PA6 is a stromal cell line derived from mouse skull. So when we place the human cell lines, they lose, on top of the PA6 cells, they lose that round morphology and they start sending process. Those processes, they colocalize with neuronal markers such as TG1 and even more mature markers such as MAP2AB. So after 4 to 5 weeks on top of the PA6 cells, 90% of the colonies express neuronal markers. So we then move to our in vivo experiment. And to do that, we isolate HFP expressing cells, we make a suspension of cells, and we inject in uterus. This is a very tricky protocol, but can be done. And HFP positive cells were transplanted to the pregnant female. We let them to turn. The pups were born by vaginal delivery, and we let the animals to grow, and we kill the animal at different time points. And then we analyze the brain looking for HFP expressing cells. So, unfortunately, not all the pups has some integration, and actually what we have is very poor integration in most of them, and some of them has actually no integration at all. Most of the HFP expressing cells, they remain as a cluster attached to the ventricle walls. So we don't know why we have such experimental variation, but we do see that the lower the passage in the cells in culture, the higher the efficiency of the integration in the brain. So, but fortunately, we do see some GFP-positive cells that colocalize with the human nuclear-specific antigen. And one can do a confocal Z-stack analysis and make a three-dimensional reconstruction of the GFP-positive cells. And we can find that all the GFP-positive cells that we analyze has only a single nuclei. And to exclude fusion, we also laser capture GFP-positive cells from the brain and GFP-negative cells from the brain. And using specific primers for mouse or human genes, we see that HFP-positive cell population are actually positive for the human-specific primers, but not for the mouse primers. So although we cannot completely exclude fusion, but we believe that's not the main process that we are seeing in our system. So as I told you before, some cells, they remain attached to the walls, and they have a very immature look, but they are negative for proliferating markers, such as Ki67. They also don't incorporate BRDU. And we see no tumor formation or teratomas. So they it seems that the cells are slightly positive for nascent. We believe that they are quiescent in the ventricles. So we then colocalize HFP-expressing cells with all the three main lineages in the neurosystem, such as TG1 for neurons, GSTPi for oligodendrocytes, and S100 beta for astrocytes. And we do detect colocalization with the three main lineages. I hope you appreciate that all the GFP-positive cells that I show, they look very similar in the morphology with the endogenous cells. And to give you some numbers for a better appreciation, what we have here is some cells that are positive for calbinding in the granular layer of the hippocampus. Those calbinding cells, HFP positive cells were the transplanted cells. So we measured the diameter of the calbindin positive cells, GFP positive cells, and we compared with the neighbor calbindin positive cells. They are all very similar in the diameter. And if you compare with the human brain, the same cells in the same location, they are actually higher. This means that the cells not only could find the right place to differentiate and express the correct marker, but they could adjust the size to the host, to the mouse brain. So we then move forward to see if those cells are actually active in the mouse brain. So we select some mature neurons that are positive for NEON. And by looking at the spines, we can see that there is a very highly arborized process with full of spines, indicating that the cells are trying to make synaptic contact. And by EM, we can see that there is presynaptic vesicle facing a postsynaptic density in the GFP-positive cells, in several GFP-positive cells that we analyze. This means that, yes, actually what we see here is a mouse neuron making contact with a human neuron. We patch clamp some GFP positive cells in the cortex. And even 1 year later after transplantation, we could actually get some firing in those neurons upon the right stimulation, proving that those cells are integrated into the neuronal network. So why do you think this is important? So we believe that now we have a model where one can engineer the human cell lines to express mutant proteins or to simulate the human disease, and we can transplant the cells in a wild-type brain. We can do the inverse. We can use mutant brains, mutant environments, using knockout animals, and you can transplant wild-type cells. And one can study the connection between the environment and the human neurons in vivo. So this is important when we try to establish the autonomous versus non-autonomous nature of some disease. So just a conclusion. We believe that our model, and together with others, highlights the remarkable conservation of the neural signal in the brain compared to human and mouse, even though the two species are separated around 100 million years ago. Also indicates that they are very responsive to microenvironment, and this is really important when we talk about neuronal diversification. Depends on the disease, you want a certain type of neurons. Also, one can visualize that in the future, with better chimeric animals, we can go for in vivo screening. This will accelerate drug discovery. And I would like to thank Rusty Gage, he's my mentor and supervisor for the nice environment, Kinichi, Nico, and Vladek, all co-authors and friends in the lab, the support I have from the Gage lab. I have to thank the Salk Institute and the ethical committee because it's such a gray area, and they were responsible for the establishment of the non-NIH stem cell core in the institute, so this work can be done with non-NIH cell lines. I have financial support from the Pew Latin America, and I also thank the organizer for putting together this meeting. Thank you.
We have time for some questions. Alexei?
Great talk, Allison. There are two possibilities that the human ESL quickly differentiate and acquire the fates of neural, presumably stem cells and then neurons. Or in most of the cell cultures, and I know you showed there's manual selection of pluripotent cells, there's always a beginning of differentiation, all the cells that begin to differentiate. So within these two possibilities, which is your favorite?
I think they have to go to neural precursor cells. But we transplant undifferentiated cells. So by
how
the
mark.
Sorry?
How you know it?
By markers in culture. If the cells are differentiated during the process of transplantation, we don't know. But in culture, it was undifferentiated cells.
Population of cells that are already committed, and that's why you have poor engraftment rates.
Could be.
Really the undifferentiated cells that are doing it. Is that
right? Could be. That's possible. Yeah, could be. Even if you think that only a very few percentage of the cells that could actually migrate and differentiate, so it may be a possibility. Yeah.
Just to follow up on that, what's your definition? So presumably you take them from pluripotent ESLs to be multipotent neural stem cells or neural precursor progenitor cells. Is that true? And you're trying to now transplant the progenitor, the neural progenitor population.
So what has been done? We didn't do anything to induce the cells to become neuroprecursor cells. We just took the cells from the undifferentiated culture and transplant them back in the embryos. So ES cells in embryonic brain.
Purely that.
Yeah, if there is a percentage of cells that has already that are already committed with neuronal lineage, maybe a possibility, but we don't know.
And you never saw tumors, teratomas, or
never. Even a year after transplantation, we never detect any tumors.
And how long did it, for you to be able to see the spines? How long did in vivo did you need to wait to see those very nice little spines coming
out? So these are very mature animals, like 2 months old. But we do detect some activity, four weeks after transplantation. Yeah.
With those kind of spines, huh?
Yeah.
I have a question.
Zach.
I have a microphone.
But just a question. I mean, if you take those same cells and put them in different parts of the mouse, you presumably will see teratomas. Is that correct?
Well, in the adult animal. In the embryonic, we don't know.
Yeah. Well, just last one question. Like, how many cells you injected and what portion of the brain you choose to inject?
So, yeah, we inject 10 to the 5th cells. But this is very possible.
How many microliters in 10 to 15?
It's 1 microliter.
Okay. Yeah. And what portion of the brain you choose to inject? What portion of the brain you inject?
Oh, it's the ventricle. It's just place the cells in the ventricle. At this stage, E14, the mouse is just some progenitor cells in a ventricle.
Over there.
Well, last question. So you said the ventricle. Have you guys tried different sites, injections?
No, it's really hard at E14 to target. It's really small. So, and we use ICR animals because they have big embryos. But maybe with some other tools, we can do that.
Any other questions? I know there's. Hopefully, if there's time, we can have a bit of a panel discussion while we move on to the next speaker.